This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today, NATO and Serb commanders signed an agreement on the withdrawal of Serb troops from Kosovo. NATO will stop the bombing campaign as soon as it verifies that withdrawal is beginning. My guest, Ivan Prentice, was nearly killed by NATO bombs 10 days ago. She was traveling with 5 journalists and 2 drivers when they got caught on a road NATO planes were bombing. One of the drivers was killed. Prentice was in Kosovo reporting for the Times of London. She also reported on the war in Bosnia. She's back in London now. I spoke to her before today's agreement was signed. She'd been in Belgrade for several weeks trying to get into Kosovo through official channels, applying through the army-run press center. Each day she was told she was on the list and should come back tomorrow. Well, she gave up and contacted a man named Daniel Schiffer, who she was told was well-connected and could get her into Kosovo.
I heard that a Greek TV station had been to Kosovo with Daniel Schiffer. He is a Franco-Italian who is married to a Serb. I knew no more about him than that. I made a few inquiries with colleagues in Italy who had come across him. He is, I suppose, what could be best described as a friend of Serbia. Nonetheless, he had taken a couple of TV crews down to Kosovo. He goes and he makes contacts. He travels around within the constraints of the war. He meets mayors, local politicians, and he has the blessing of the army press centre. I managed to track him down, asked him whether I could come with him. He eventually agreed. So although it probably isn't ideal by Western standards of journalism, it was the only way at that time, and indeed I'm sure to this day, of going there and having some freedom of movement. We could dictate our own schedule, which places we wanted to visit.
Did he require that you pay in order to go on this journey with him?
He himself was at great pains to say that he takes no money. Nonetheless, we did all pay money, which we were told was to pay for petrol, which is in very short supply, for paperwork, for hotels, and for food.
How much did it come out to?
I made 2 trips. The first trip was 4,000 Deutschmarks, and the price had risen a week later to 5,000 Deutschmarks.
Which would be around $2,000, do you think?
1,500.
Were there ground rules when you were traveling that either the Yugoslav army had set or that Schiffer had set?
Not at all. We were astonished, all of us, I think, by the ease with which we moved through checkpoints. He was obviously exceedingly well known to Serbian authorities and Serbian politicians along the entire route. I would say no guidelines or curbs were set.
Did you see signs of ethnic cleansing when you were there?
Most definitely. What we saw were long stretches of country road with empty villages. The difference between what I had expected from what I had read and what I found was that the vast majority of these empty villages were standing and undamaged. In each of the villages, 1, 2, maybe 3 homes had very obviously been set on fire. When I asked about these, I was told that these were where the homes of KLA, and I imagine that they were real or imagined KLA. But one can imagine that even though it was 1 or 2 homes and then the rest of the village left intact, one can imagine the terror that would have been caused in the raids on those houses. But today they are just completely isolated, desolate. There is not an animal. Very, very, very quiet for mile after mile after mile.
How much bombing damage was there in the actual towns that you passed through?
That was the other big surprise. It was much heavier than I had anticipated and much heavier than in the rest of Serbia. Pristina, the heart of old Pristina, many of the Albanian homes are just matchwood. They look like something out of Vukovar or Mostar. Every town has its centre pretty well bombed, completely flattened. This isn't the sort of damage you really see much in the rest of Serbia.
Do you think that the bombing happened after the ethnic Albanians had been forced out, or do you think that they were trapped between the Yugoslav army and the bombing?
I managed to speak to a couple of independent sources, aid workers, and a couple of other people who had been in the province from the beginning of the year, continuously. They all tell the same story, that the real fierce, intense fighting against the KLA and therefore also against civilians began in the 2 weeks before the bombing began. That's when the bombing began. They used that as cover to continue this ferocious drive against the KLA. People had been leaving, beginning to leave in a mass exodus in that 2 weeks, but it takes a very long time to walk from some of the interior parts of Kosovo. When the bombing began, my impression is it was used as a cover for some really extremist acts against Albanians, but that the bombing itself also definitely contributed to the number of people who were leaving. I did manage to speak independently to a few Albanians who spoke English. I don't speak Albanian. Without any Serbs, no interpreters around, and they all were very keen to leave, those who were still there, very keen to leave the bombing. They would have liked to come back when the bombing ends, but they were very keen to get away. The bombing is heavy, morning, noon, and night.
I'd like you to describe the situation you found yourself in when you were bombed. You were going back from Pristina to a car that you had to abandon because of rubble on the road. Would you pick up the story from there?
Yes, we got back to this road tunnel. Our two cars had been parked. There were two road tunnels about 30 yards apart, and our cars were parked under one of them, and we were climbing over the rubble of the second tunnel to try to get back onto the roadway. We heard the sound of jets is fairly constant, but we suddenly heard jets flying far, far lower. The sound was far louder, and we could clearly see the aircraft. We looked at one another. I think we all instinctively knew that this was a bombing raid. And having been crawling over rubble of a tunnel, and NATO does tend to go back and hit targets more than once to try to make sure they completely demolish whatever target they're attacking. The first bomb hit, we all then ran. We were very panicky. I would say most of us were very panicky. We didn't know where to go. We didn't know if to go into the roof of one of the tunnels, was that inviting the whole tunnel to come down on top of us if that were hit? If we stayed out in the open, this mountain road was in a very steep ravine, very exposed, and we were trapped between the two tunnels. There were, I believe, five bombs in all. The second bomb killed our driver, who had also been acting as our interpreter. He was in a car under the second tunnel. He looked as if he had been in the safest place of all, but he was the one person to perish. There was about 4 minutes between each bomb, and each time the jets, I think there were two jets, they climbed away. There'd be about 4 minutes, then they'd come back down again. At the time, it was exceedingly frightening, and we just thought it would never end.
So what did you decide was the safest place, comparatively, that you could
hide? At the time, I honestly didn't think there was anywhere safe. A Portuguese colleague and I, we became separated from the others. We found a water culvert which was carrying water down from the mountain into a river about 20 feet down from the road that we were on. This culvert was about 6 feet in diameter. And it wasn't, crucially, it wasn't being overhung by any major part of the mountain. So we thought if they did bomb near it, pieces of the mountain wouldn't come crashing down on us. And we hid in there for the last two bombs.
What was the closest one of the bombs came to you?
I would guess it was about 15 metres away, and it was the one that I thought had definitely got me. My colleagues who had seen me, because there's a lot of smoke and dust gets blown up by these bombs. That was the one. I was thrown off my feet by this one, covered in thick black, couldn't breathe, felt the blast wave, and was convinced that that blast wave was the last thing I would feel.
Were you injured?
Miraculously lightly. Cuts, grazes, really, it just a miracle.
Could you hear afterwards?
My ears were affected, but not for very long. I was astonished that the power of the blast wave was amazing. I felt for a moment, you hear about people who tread on landmines or get severely injured in other ways, and you hear that they cannot feel anything for a while, and they try to stand up, and then they find something ghastly. After that particular bomb, hardly dared look at myself, because I really was convinced there would be some terrible injury, and was amazed when there wasn't. Then the plane started coming again, so all my faculties returned and I started running.
What did you do when the bombing stopped?
The instinct was to get out, but my colleague and I knew myself, we both decided it would be best to stay there for at least half an hour to make absolutely certain that the jets weren't going to come back for another run. We were about 20 minutes into that when we heard a car pull up. We thought it might miraculously be the driver who had been killed. We thought maybe he got out of that car in the confusion and had managed to go and get help. But as it transpired, it was two very large Yugoslav army officers who came, peered over they had heard on their walkie-talkies what had happened. They came down and they plucked us from the culvert, and they managed to get us away from that area. And shortly afterwards, bombing did indeed begin again on that road.
How did the members of the Serb army treat you, and where did they take you?
They took us initially to the closest village. Turkish, Gypsy, Romanis and Turkish people mostly lived in this village. They came swarming out of their houses, gave us sweet drinks, sat us down in chairs. I then realised that we were sitting right next to, I mean inches away from, a bridge. I wasn't happy about that, because I thought, well, if this is the road they're going for, they're obviously going to be after the bridges. The army then said that they would take us up. They had a doctor in a village high in the mountain. So we were driven up there, given first aid. We were treated quite amazingly. It was a very peculiar feeling to have been bombed by NATO and to be given medical treatment, food and calming words by Serbian soldiers.
Do you think you were treated so well by the Serbian soldiers because your trip was sponsored by Daniel Schiffer, who is a friend of the Serbs?
It's very difficult to say. I have been travelling to the region for over 20 years. And that means all sides, Muslims, Croats, the whole of what was the former Yugoslavia. I personally have found individually people from all communities in the region personally to be very open and kind and generous. There is, of course, an alter side to that. They also can be exceedingly violent and unpredictable. It really is difficult to know. Daniel Schiefer certainly is popular among the Serbs. But just going by my own experiences, I doubt it was entirely that.
My guest is Ivan Prentice of the Times of London. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eve Ann Prentice of the Times of London. She was nearly killed by NATO bombs while reporting from Kosovo. I'm wondering how this experience of being bombed by NATO, which your country, England, is a member of, and then being rescued by Serb soldiers, affected your view on the war.
Not really. It is very difficult, obviously, to look at bombing dispassionately after one has been bombed, particularly since a man died that we had come to know. We had been eating, spending all our days with our driver and interpreter. I had been questioning anyway the extent of the bombing, and it merely added to my questions. Why not bomb this particular road if it has to be bombed in the middle of the night? We were not the only civilians on that road. In fact, we didn't, until the army came down from the mountain, they were not using that road. Until they came down from the mountain, I hadn't seen a soldier on that road.
So you thought and still think that the bombing was excessive? Or more dangerous than it needed to be for the civilian population?
I think the number of civilians of all ethnic groups who have been made homeless or killed or injured, I think people, when this area is finally opened up to the mass of TV cameras, I think people will be shocked by the extent of the damage caused by NATO. I just have the feeling that a little more might have been done to avoid civilian casualties. As, for instance, why not bomb that road at 3:30 in the morning and not 3:30 in the afternoon?
While you were being rescued by Serb soldiers and then fed and having Serb doctors tend to the wounds that you got while you were being bombed, did you ask them any questions? It might have seemed like a very inappropriate time to ask them questions about ethnic cleansing and other Serb actions, but I'm wondering if you did it anyways.
We did speak to them. I don't think any of us spoke to them specifically about ethnic cleansing. We spoke to them about their lives. They all seemed to be conscripts. There were doctors, lawyers. They really were not very happy about being pulled into a war. Nonetheless, they felt they were doing a duty. They spoke very much as any civilian I have ever spoken to in Belgrade, anybody from the university. They spoke with great anger of feeling that they were being punished for something they had not done. But no, we did not speak to them about the ethnic cleansing. I think all of us half expected to be arrested because we were taken to an army camp, which they very much wanted to keep secret because undoubtedly NATO would have bombed it if they had known where it was.
So you're surprised they let you go?
There is a sometimes charming naivety about Serbs. So I was not surprised. I think some of my colleagues were surprised. In a very childlike way, they just said, please, please, you won't tell anybody where we are, will you? It could have gone either way. That naivety could also have led them to arrest us, or worse. Who knows? I mean, they could have killed us and nobody would have been any the wiser. They could have killed us, put us under the rubble and said NATO had done it.
Now, you said that the conscripts who you met from the Serb army, including the doctors, felt that they were being punished for something they hadn't done. And I'm not sure whether you mean that they don't believe there was ethnic cleansing or they feel it's the government that should be punished and not the civilians.
I think it's exactly the latter. I think they think it's the government that should be punished. I think that they feel that they personally were not involved in ethnic cleansing, that these were done by forces who were sent in right at the beginning. And they've been dragged into a situation that makes them feel hated on all sides, both by Western Europe, but also that, you know, some of them have been very happily living among ethnic Albanians if they come from Kosovo, and they know that will probably never happen again.
When you were getting bombed, obviously it was a terrifying experience, but I'm wondering if you were thinking, well, this is the price one pays for being a journalist who ventures into a territory that's being bombed, or if you were particularly angry with NATO for bombing a place in which there were civilians.
I think inevitably it made me much more empathetic towards the civilians who are being bombed. I did not feel personally angry or affronted. I felt very, very frightened. I truly did think I was going to die. However, after we got back to Pristina, and particularly after I crossed the border into Macedonia, my first feeling was a great distress and pity for the civilians, you know, Albanians, Serbs, everybody who lives in Kosovo, who cannot cross that border and who have to live with that fear all the time.
Eve Ann Prentice is a staff writer for The Times of London. She spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in London. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.